This day, Easter Sunday, is just too big. It's too big. It's all this buildup. You know, we go through Holy Week and we get here and it's like, wow, there it is. And the message that comes to us, not only from the scripture and the word and other things, but the music and the people and everything that we do and everything that we talked about has to do with victory. It has to do with a celebration of another life, a life that comes after death. And that's very, very important. It's who we are as people of faith. It's what we're all about. But we really live it up on this one day. But what we have to understand when we come to this one day is the Christian meaning of Jesus' life and death. And it is this: that God who created the universe, God who came from the heavens, the King of the cosmos, chose to visit our little planet. And he chose to came disguised, hiding his glory, and he came in just the normal way, born as a small baby. He grew up and he began his ministry at 30 years old, and he was preaching the good news of the kingdom of God. And then he began to teach, and he began to tell us a lot of things. He told us what God was like, and he told us what we are like as humans. He told us all of these things. And when he did that, he told us what it was like to be a member of the kingdom of God. After that, he began to heal the sick and open the eyes of the blind and even raised somebody from the dead. And we were amazed by those things. He did some strange things. He loved sinners and broken people. He loved the people who were pushed down in life and made to feel small. And he called them to be part of his ministry. And he went after all of them: drunkards, prostitutes, sinners, tax collectors. He loved them all. And he told them that there's a God who loves them that has runaway children, and this God, this Father, loves it when they turn back towards the Father, and the Father runs to meet them. This was the picture of the God that he painted for people. And then he began to denounce the religious authorities. He began to talk about the religious hierarchy in a way, and he denounced their rules and their regulations and their hypocrisy, and he called them out, and they became very angry with him. Some people listened to Jesus and they just thought he was crazy. They thought there was something wrong upstairs, but a lot of people saw Jesus and heard his message and his teaching and they began to follow him. And they wanted to know more about this man. Now, some of these followers were with him this past week as he came into Jerusalem and he began to preach. But those religious leaders were very threatened by his popularity and they were very angry and they were tired of his condemnation of their hypocrisy. And they came together and they decided that he must die. So that week, he was arrested. At first, he ate the Passover Thursday night with his disciples. And then they went to the garden to pray. And as he prayed with them, they fell asleep. Then after that, one of his disciples betrays him. Another denies him. And the rest desert him. And Jesus finds himself alone. Alone by himself. After he's arrested, he's taken to Caiaphas' house. Caiaphas is the high priest. And he was put in a room where the most religious people on the planet gathered. And in that room, the most religious people on the planet condemned Jesus for blasphemy. Now think about that for a second. These are the people, if anyone should recognize God when God comes down, these should have been the people to recognize him. But these people, the most religious people on the planet, condemn God for blaspheming God. They were blinded. They were blinded by their own fears and insecurity. And this is the tragic irony that we experience in Holy Week. So they took Jesus over to Pontius Pilate. Pilate was the ruling Roman governor at the time. He was in charge of the justice in the land, and he took care of these things. And he determined that Jesus was innocent. He could find nothing wrong with him. Yet he determined that Jesus would be punished and die for this. And what Pilate did is he brought two messiahs out in front of the people. He brought Barabbas out. And it was the tradition that they would choose one to be saved. And he brought Barabbas out. Barabbas was the one who carried the sword. And by the sword, he sought to kill Romans and expel them from the land. He was a murderer and a thief. That was his trial. And then he brought Jesus of Nazareth out. Now, Jesus of Nazareth was the one that did not have a weapon. Jesus of Nazareth was the one who healed the centurion's servant. Jesus of Nazareth was the one who said, if a Roman comes to you and slaps you on the cheek, turn the other cheek. Jesus was the one who said, if a Roman comes to you and says, carry my pack for a mile, carry it for him 2 miles. Jesus was the one that said, don't love just your neighbors, but love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. And Pilate put these two in front of everyone as a Messiah, and which one do you think they chose? You got it, the one with the sword, who would kill Romans and expel them from the land. This is what happened in that original Holy Week. Jesus was then taken by Roman soldiers into the courtyard of Pilate's headquarters. There would have been an attachment there of about 600 soldiers at the time. The one who never had a weapon was led into the middle of them. And there they sought to mock him and spit on him. They would walk beside him as they led him out to the cross. And at that moment, we can realize all the bad things that we can ever think of, the ugliness, the human sin, the pestilence, the tragedy, fears and insecurity, all the hate was bottled up in this one time. You know, some of you had said to me in the past, some of you said, if God would just show up and just show me, if God would just knock on my door, Pastor Tom, I could believe. And what I've said to you is this, I said, well, God did. A couple thousand years ago, God showed up and he knocked on the door of humanity and it didn't go very well. We crucified him. And so many times when that kind of goodness shows up, we're just not ready for it. You know, we see the pain and the suffering of Jesus in that time and we wonder, how could this ever happen? Now here's the thing, we need to understand this. We need to understand that for the disciples during that time, on that Good Friday, there were two who were bold enough to come forward and ask for the body. The disciples were still in hiding. They were in fear for their own lives. And those two who came forward were Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus. And they asked for the body, and they took the body down, and they prepared the body. And they put it into an empty tomb. They had washed the body, and they had put scented oils on it, and they wrapped that body in a shroud. And that was the funeral service for Jesus on that Sabbath day. There were two wealthy men there and two women. Four people showed up at Jesus' funeral. Four people. Two women and two men. The rest were also afraid. They were hiding behind locked doors because they were afraid that someone would come and arrest them and do the very same thing to them. And their world had been shattered. For these disciples who locked themselves away from Friday to Saturday was a very dark time. It was a terrible time. All of their hopes and dreams were pinned on Christ, and that went away with the cross and the death. And they thought, what next? What would happen next? And you know, after seeing this, I look at this and I say, wow, if I was there, if I saw this, this would push me towards agnosticism. It would push me towards atheism, because how could such a terrible thing happen to such a wonderful man? Is there really a God? This is what the disciples were going through. They were wondering, is there really a God? Is there any hope left? Now what are we going to do? He's gone. This is what the disciples were experiencing from Friday night to Sunday morning. But you understand that feeling. I talk about it, but you already understand it, because you already know what it's like to live through Friday night to Sunday morning. You've had things happen in your life where Friday night to Sunday morning was a terrible, dark time. You were experiencing evil. I've been with some of you during these times, whether it's a divorce or financial ruin or something's going wrong with mom or dad or the kids. And you've looked out and you said, is there really a God? Is there any hope? Will life ever be the same again? And you know, sometimes we experience this as a community, as a nation. We experience 9/11. We experience these terrible tragedies or wars. We experience these things and we look up and we say, is there a God in heaven? Is there any goodness left? Are we always going to be in these dark times when evil seems to triumph and there's no hope? Goodness can't be seen. That's where the disciples were. They were so overcome and caught up in their own grief. They couldn't move. They couldn't mobilize. They couldn't do anything. But here's the thing. If we don't understand the magnitude of evil that took place on Good Friday, we cannot appreciate what happens on Easter Sunday morning. We have to know the magnitude and the horror of the terrible things that happened. So when we get to today, we understand how incredibly good this is and how it changes our lives forever. That first Easter Sunday, we have to consider what happened that Easter Sunday. Mary Magdalene comes to the grave, and what she's doing is she hopes to find two or three men who can move the stone away. She's going to finish the work that didn't get done on Friday because they had to get that body into the tomb before the Sabbath started at dusk, because the Jews would not allow you to touch a dead body on the Sabbath. So that went from Friday night to Sunday morning. So she came looking to do this work. So she came to do this work, and when she arrived there with her oils all prepared to finish the work, she came around that turn and she looked, and the stone had been rolled away. She was horrified. Weren't they satisfied to put him on a cross and kill him? They also had to come and move the stone and drag his body away to desecrate him even more. She was having her own Friday to Sunday experience, and she just didn't know what to do. But when she looked inside, or as Matthew tells us, on top of the stone, she saw what John calls an angel. Angel in the Greek is just messenger. See, she saw a young man clothed in white, and he had a message for her. And this message is, and we learned this in the past 6 weeks when we were going through the Lord's Prayer, his message was, don't be afraid. What's the number one message we find from Genesis to Revelation when we look through the whole Bible? The number one message that's repeated over and over and over again, God tells God's people, don't be afraid. So this messenger says to her, don't be afraid. Seriously, don't be afraid. I've got a question for you. Why are you looking for the living among the dead? He is not here. He is risen. Can you imagine the surprise in that? So she ran quickly to tell the other disciples, and she gets back to tell the disciples, and what do they say? They say, you're crazy. You're overcome by your grief. Just settle down. There's no way that can happen. Dead men don't walk out of tombs. But they had to go see for themselves, and they went, and they found it was just as she said. Grave clothes, but no body. No body. And what happens in the gospel next, it's different in all the different gospels. John, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, they all have these different stories that come together. But what I feel is when you look at all these stories together, they're just getting different perspective, different angles on it. But you know, the oldest and first story of the resurrection that we get isn't from the gospels, it's from the Apostle Paul. That letter is actually older than the writing of the gospels. A letter to the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 15, where Apostle Paul tells us that Jesus appeared first to the women at the tomb and then to the 11 disciples. Remember, Judas took his own life. Okay, then Jesus appears after the resurrection to James, the brother of Jesus. And then Jesus appears to over 500 people. And all during the next 40 days, all these different appearances where he came and taught and talked to people, and they touched and they held him and they held his hand and they realized he's not a ghost. Okay, and that's Jesus' time when he comes and he says, I am not dead. And he gives them that final message. Look, go out into the world and preach the good news and make disciples and baptize. And lo, I tell you, even though you might not see me or you might not feel me, I will be with you to the end of the age forever. And from that time on, we have a totally transformed set of disciples. We don't even recognize them. In the next chapters, we find them walking through the streets of Jerusalem, proclaiming and preaching the good news of God and a risen Christ. And they're saying, I don't care what you do to us. We've seen the risen Christ. He's alive. And from that time on, they preach and they move amongst other people and they take this message to the world that had never been heard before. Although they're beaten and imprisoned and exiled, 11 of them lose their... 10 of them lose their lives for the message that they're proclaiming, and all of them suffer because they knew at that moment they would never, ever again in their life face a dark moment like they did from Friday night to Sunday morning, because Christ was alive and he would be with them forever. And folks, that's significance. That's our hope. That's why we come to hear the story. That's why we hear the same story over and over again in Easter, because we want to reclaim that very same faith that the disciples did, so that we can go about our lives never, always knowing that we never have to experience that darkness again. We've all heard that darkness, but what does that mean for us? How does that play out? Well, the first thing I want you to know is this resurrection, it's Jesus' vindication. All those crazy things he said while he was here, He's vindicated. His identity, he's vindicated. His message, he's vindicated. He said, I am the bread of life. Whoever eats of me will never be hungry again. Whoever drinks of me will never be thirsty again. What was he talking about? He said, I'm the resurrection life. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. He claimed to be the Messiah, the Son of the living God. He claimed to be the Son of Man, the representative for all humanity. Okay, he was vindicated by the empty tomb. His ministry, this very unique ministry where he said this countercultural message, blessed are the poor, blessed are the meek, blessed are the hungry, blessed are the lowly, blessed are the peacemakers, blessed are those who are persecuted in my name. He's vindicated by that. That was his very identity. Vindication means when there was somebody that you thought was guilty, who was lying and didn't have it right, when they're vindicated, all of a sudden you realize they were telling the truth. And they were not wrong. And it was all true. Muhammad Ali did something very interesting in his life. Muhammad Ali got to a point where he sold his identity for $50 million. I don't know if you knew that. For $50 million, a company gave Muhammad Ali the money so they could take his name, his image, and everything that he had ever been recorded saying and use it to sell whatever they wanted to sell in perpetuity. For $50 million, they were allowed to use all of that to sell their goods any way they saw how. And you know, I started thinking about this. I was thinking about Muhammad Ali. The guy was not known for his humility, all right? He said things like, you know, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee, your fist can't hit what your eyes can't see, you know? He said to George Foreman once, he said, George, if you even dream of beating me, you better wake up and apologize. I am the greatest. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff he'd say. But you know, he also said one thing. He said, he was taking a beating one time. He said, you know, you're bragging all the time. You do that. And he stood up and he said, you know something? It's not bragging if you make it come true. And he's got a point. Jesus did a lot of bragging when you think back. All those things that people thought were unusual and crazy and countercultural, when the empty tomb occurs on Easter morning, all of that is vindicated, and it's not bragging when it comes true. The tomb was empty. When you can back it up, it's not bragging. And you know, we can talk about atonement theories. We have atonement theories. We have all kinds of things out there that explain this, but we just wonder sometimes, you know, how did this really happen, and what does it mean for us today? In real life, how does this play out? You know, it's our defining story. Our defining story is Easter morning. This is God saying that I'm stronger than death, I'm stronger than betrayal, I'm stronger than weakness, I'm stronger than hate and bigotry and jealousy and envy and all these things. I'm stronger than that. And it's God saying, no matter what happens in your life, Jesus is going to have the last word. Jesus is going to be there. It's our defining story. Okay, it's meant to shape us in how we respond. It's meant to shape us in how we go forward and live our lives in the light of this one particular story. And it's interesting how that happens in real life, how you play this out, you know. And in the global scale, there's all kinds of reasons to be afraid and worry. I'll tell you what, if you're like me and you wake up and you watch the news or you read the news, you pick up the paper or magazine and so forth, every week you got another reason to worry. Every week you got another reason to be afraid. So over here I'm going to pick up time, and it's all going to be about the nuclear threat in North Korea, right? So I'm going to read about that. And then over here I'm going to pick up Newsweek, and it's going to be all about the terroristic threat and what's going on in the Middle East. And then I'll pick up another magazine, and oh my gosh, if those two things don't get me, climate change is going to get me, right? Global warming is coming down. So I'll tell you what, I pick up these things and I read them, and it gives me panic attacks. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, every week there's something that's going to get me. Over and over and over again, how dark it is out there. And you know, here's what I say about this. They're probably all true. I mean, that's what the Apostle Paul says in Romans 8. He says this. He says, the entire earth suffers and groans under the effects of human sin. It's probably all true. But I don't read the story and let it terrify me. You know why? Because I don't think some communist threat with nuclear power in North Korea is going to be the end of the world, is going to have the last word, because Jesus has the last word. And I don't think terrorists that come from some other place in the planet are going to have the last word, because Jesus has the last word. And no matter how bad climate change is, no matter what, it's not going to have the last word, because Jesus has the last word. That's how I live my life. Folks, that's hope. That's what gives us hope. When we face the problems of our time, yes, we say, God, help us to be engaged. Help us to do something good. Help us to be there. Help us to help out. Give us the courage to be the people who will do that. You know, I'll never forget, we went to, Kim and I, a long time ago, went to an attorney's meeting. It was all about our will and estate, right? And we get there, and this guy starts asking questions. He's like, well, Tom, what do you want to have happen with your insurance and your stuff if you die? I was like, well, I want Kim to have it all. And he asked Kim the same thing. She said, well, I want Tom to have it. Okay, that's easy. And then he says, well, I got to ask you this question. Tom and Kim, what if you both die? You know, what's it? And I'm like, this guy's a lot of fun to hang around, apparently. He's like, no. We ask all these questions. I said, well, we go through the whole thing to, you know, prepare for the boys' guardianship, do all these things, you know. And then he says, okay, I got one more question. Okay, I have to ask you this. What Kim and Tom, if you both die and the boys die? I said, wow, this is getting heavy, you know. And that'll kind of get to you. You start thinking about, you know, your kids and what's going on there. And that kind of stuff can tear you apart. And if you're not looking at that kind of stuff from the perspective of faith, from the lens of Jesus and the empty tomb on Easter morning, it will bring you down. But not even that has the last word. Not even that. Jesus has the last word, friends, no matter what the darkness is in your life. Not too long ago, I did a whole sermon series here on the afterlife. What happens when you die? That's what we were talking about. Now, we talked about all kinds of near-death experience stories and so forth, and there was one story that I touched on. It was the story of Don Piper. Don Piper was driving his little Ford Escort across a bridge. It was pouring rain. A truck lost control in the opposing lane, came across the double yellow, and basically hit him head-on, ran over this little Ford Escort. The people on the scene said Don died instantly. The car was crushed and pushed into the side of the bridge. There were other people involved in the accident. They survived. They were all taken away. But Don, they looked at him, and they couldn't get a pulse, and they just pronounced him dead. There was a pastor that was stuck back in the traffic jam, back a ways, who got out of his car and made his way up to the bridge and saw that a terrible accident had happened. And he went to the police and the paramedics, and he said, you know, is there anything I can do? Is there anybody that needs prayed for? You know, what can we do? And the police said, well, the others have been taken to the hospital, but we do have one fatality. The body's still in the car. We've put a tarp over it. You'll see it up on the left-hand side. Go up. So this pastor goes up to the car, and he removes the tarp a little bit, and he sees the only way he can reach the body is to go back in through the back window. So he sneaks in through the back window, and he gets a hand on Don Piper, and he prays. And he prays for Don and his family and for Jesus to accept him into heaven. And then he gets them praying. He says, amen. And he says, well, I'm going to sing a song while I'm here. And this pastor goes, what a friend we have in Jesus. Oh. And the body starts to sing with him. And he jumps out of the back of the car, and he's like, whoa, what just happened? He runs up to the police, and he says, you guys, he's alive, he's alive. He's in the car, but he's alive. They're like, no, we took his pulse. We went through the car. We looked at everything. He's dead. And this pastor goes, he's singing with me. They ran over to the car. They got the jaws of life. They extract Don Piper, and he lives to write the book, which was made into a movie, 90 Minutes in Heaven. You know, and when he talks about the heaven portion of it, he says, you know, the last thing I remember is seeing that truck right in front of my car. And he said, after that, there was no tunnel with a light at the end of it. He said it was just incredibly bright light. And he said, I heard these voices. It was like music. He says, and if I close my eyes today, he said, I can still hear those voices, and they permeate my body. He says, it's the most beautiful thing ever. He says, I felt that the whole time I was there. And he said, then I turned, and there was a whole crowd of people, and Grandpa Joe came out to me. Grandpa Joe had died. It was his favorite grandpa when he was a little boy. He came to him and hugged him, and he said, Donnie. And then Don turned around, and he said, there was my boyhood friend who had died in a car accident, 19. And he had this smile on his face, and he welcomed me by name, and I could tell there was so much joy in his life. And then he looked around. It was all these people that had gone on ahead of him. The most beautiful story. And you know, in my line of business, I get to spend a lot of time with people at the end of their lives, or family who are surrounding people that are near the end of their lives, and we talk about this stuff all the time. Yeah, I ask what the doctors say, and we talk about this and that, but I hear the most wonderful words all the time when I'm with those people. When they turn to me and say, Pastor Tom, I'm not afraid to die. I know where I'm going, and I know who's They say, yeah, I'll worry about the kids, and I don't know what's going to happen over here, but I myself, I'm prepared. And as a pastor, those are the most incredible words that you can hear. Because those people who are in that place know that whatever darkness they're experiencing at that time does not have the last word, does not get to say what's going to go on in the future. And I remind them of that. I say, I'm going to see you again someday. And there's a God who loves you, and there's a Jesus who's holding you and waiting for you, and he'll never leave you because he told us, lo, until the end of time, I will be with you. That's what the Easter story is all about, folks. So I have to ask you this question. What is it in your life that defines your story? What is it in your life that defines who you are? If it's not the truth of Easter, if it's not what's coming through here, I need to tell you that's something you should think about. Maybe you're here and you don't have a church family, you don't go to church that much, but maybe you're here today and you're thinking this is something that would be good for you. I just want to tell you today, if you're here, you found a church family. We welcome everybody here who's asking these very same questions. We say, don't leave your mind at the door. Don't leave your heart there. Bring those two things together and we can work it out. Because that's what we're all about. You know, if you're thinking that you need to know a little bit more about this Jesus and how to live out that kind of life that he calls us to, if you want to have that security and accept that promise that he will be there to the end of the age and he will always have the final word, this is the place to do it. This is the place to do it, because there's one thing that I want us all to get to in that point in our life, and that is, I'm ready to go whenever he calls me. Friends, that's a choice that you make. That's a choice that you make. How do you live with Christ every day so you can get to that point? It's Easter, and our hope is that Jesus will always have the last word. Let's pray.